Name and address.
My name's Golda Starr. I'm from Salton. I'm opposed to ever fluoridating its water. As you can see on my website, www.fluoridedetective.com, I moved out of Montlake Terrace because they get Everett's fluoridated water. There's something that's called a precautionary principle, and it's used all over the European Union. Basically, it states that if an action is suspected of causing harm to the public, then the burden of proof that it's not harmful falls on those initiating the action. So let's take this little principle and plug it into this fluoride issue. It goes like this. All you guys that think that fluoridated drinking water is necessary must first prove that it's not capable of causing harm to the public and that other safer actions aren't possible. The precautionary principle means that if in doubt, leave it out. But right now in Everett, we're not operating on the precautionary principle. Right now in Everett, the burden of proof rests on the consumers of fluoridated water to prove that it's unnecessary and unhealthy. But is that right? Shouldn't the burden of proof be the responsibility of those adding the chemical to the water in the first place? Shouldn't you first prove, beyond doubt, that it won't be harmful to us? The silica fluoride that's added to Everett's water has not been tested for its health effects on people. The silica fluoride that's added to Everett's water contains arsenic and lead and a host of other contaminants. The silica fluoride that's added to Everett's water is a chemical compound that has not been purified. Now, it's known that fluoride is harmful to adults' kidneys and children's kidneys. I recommend checking out the sheer number of pediatric nephrologists that are in the Seattle area and ask yourself if fluoride might have anything to do with the extremely high level of kidney problems in children. Ask yourself, why are we taking these chances with the health of our children when we could simply teach them good oral hygiene habits and accomplish the same or better results? I thank you.
Thank you. Next we have Dr. David John. Please state your name and your address, and then which comments to bring in.
I'm Dr. David John from Mercer Island. You should be very skeptical about information you received from fluoridation proponents because there has been so much dishonesty in the research they use. I have given you a sheet, this one here, showing 19 different studies. Well, 18 of them show that fluoride causes genetic damage. And one study stands out because it's by the National Institute of Dental Research and supposedly shows that fluoride does not cause genetic damage. However, please note the footnote that shows that the pre-publication copy revealed genetic damage by fluoride. But by the time it was published, the numbers were changed to hide clear evidence of genetic damage by fluoride. One early research paper supporting water fluoridation was by Dr. Harold Hodge. It reported that workers exposed to high levels of fluoride in the Manhattan Atomic Bomb Project had less cavities. Dr. Hodge deliberately left out the fact that the fluoride had so damaged the workers' teeth that many of the teeth had fallen out. So they didn't have as many teeth, so of course they didn't have as many cavities. Dr. Hodge knew this very well because he had been the chief toxicologist for the Manhattan Project. The study was accepted and promulgated by high-level governmental and public agencies to promote fluoridation, even though they must have known it was fraudulent. Watch out, folks. There's fraud going on. You're being deceived. Other evidence that fluoride science isn't real is the number of highly qualified research professionals who publish accurate and important research revealing fluoride toxicity, and then cannot get any more grant money or are just fired outright and blackballed so they can't do research anymore. This happened in 1990, for instance, to Dr. William Marcus. He was the senior toxicologist at the Office of Drinking Water at the EPA. He sued his superiors and won back not only his job, but $50,000. This also happened to Dr. Phyllis Mullinax, who had been on the faculty of Harvard Medical School and was the head of the prestigious Forsyth Dental Institute until she dared to publish the first paper, in 1995 that was, showing fluoride's toxic effects on the brain. Fluoride science is designed to support water fluoridation and to block, distort, or spin as much of the increasing adverse research information real scientists from all over the world are producing as possible. Therefore, city council members should be very skeptical of any official pronouncements you hear, and instead study up yourselves on the real facts. Then I believe you will vote to stop water fluoridation. Incidentally, I also made a mistake when I spoke last time. I told you there were 20,000 people represented by Robert Carton in the EPA. There are 1,200 people. I said they were all scientists. I think a lot of them were scientists, but some of them were also the attorneys for the EPA. So when this suit was filed by them against the federal government, you see, it wasn't just the scientists might be hot-headed and maybe they don't know about the law. It was also the EPA's attorneys who sued the federal government for double fraud. The fraud that fluoride doesn't harm people, and the fraud that it also decreases cavities.
Thank you, Dr. Brown.
You're welcome.
Next, we have Mr. James Deal. Please state your name and your address, and please limit your comments to 3 minutes.
Hello friends, I'm James Robert Deal, attorney from Linwood. I'm the president of FluorideClassAction.com and the vice president of WashingtonSafeWater.com. I bring you news. First of all, there's another fluoride lawsuit. And the first page, if you look on the second page, it's got a link to it so you can print out the complaint and you can see the lady's teeth. So she's suing Nestle and Gerber for selling baby water, which she drank in great quantity when she was a child. The next page is a press release by LULAC, League of United Latin American Citizens, another minority group that says this is a civil rights issue because minorities such as Hispanics, blacks, and the poor in general are impacted much more greatly by fluoridation. We don't know why, possibly the difference in diet, increased diabetes, and more water consumption. Next is a news release that comes out of Eureka Springs, Arkansas, where Arkansas now has a mandatory fluoridation law and the water engineer was trying to get the best fluoride, so there are 49 suppliers of fluoridation materials and he sent a request to all of them saying, you know, you applied for NSF 60 approval. All fluoridation materials by law in this state, in 43 states, must be NSF 60 approved. So he figured, well, they had to submit all the toxicological reports so they should have them. Not one of them responded with any materials at all. Now, one of the fluoride suppliers is Mosaic. And on the second page of the Mosaic MSDS, the disclaimer says, no warranty of merchantability, fitness for any particular purpose is implied or stated. Any person buying this product must determine on his own the suitability of the product and assume all risk of its use. Mosaic disclaims any liability for loss or damage. Now this is after Mosaic applies for NSF 60 certification. And we're required to use NSF 60 products. Now, what does the NSF 60 say? It says, NSF 60 provides minimum requirements. Toxicological reviews must be submitted. Requires the testing of chemical products. Toxicological examinations. And refers to the health of the product. So next, I've got the first page out of a website article I've got. You can go to fluorideclassaction.com/sham. This is how the sham works. Mosaic disclaims all liability, but gets their product NSF certified. NSF says it's healthy and the toxicological studies are done. Now, what I'm telling you here is that NSF 60 is not being observed because NF 60 is not enforcing it. NSF is not enforcing it. So, it's illegal to fluoridate.
When you met with Council President Apple at a meeting, I expressed at the time your opinion that what you were really asking was for Council to act as a science court and set on less qualified people to do that. It was hard for me to imagine. But you made a statement of fact here twice, and in fact, regarding the National Kidney Foundation. What you have said is that the National Kidney Foundation, I'm quoting from last week at 3 minutes and 43 seconds in, quote, they withdrew their endorsement of fluoridation. And I thought, although I'm not a scientist, that's something I can check. So I did some research here. What I find is that the National Kidney Foundation issued a position paper in 1981. And that 1981 position paper included the statement, quote, there is insufficient evidence at this time to recommend the use of fluoride-free drinking water for all patients with renal disease. And the first thing I would point out is your statement that that is an endorsement, that an endorsement was withdrawn. I would call that inaccurate. And part of the framework here is when you come forward in the face of scientific consensus, you really have to have your facts very, very solid, or you're going to lose people's confidence in your credibility. And we've got many instances now of people challenging scientific consensus. We've had a national political leader assert that the human papillomavirus vaccine causes mental retardation. So you have to take these statements very carefully. Anyone can stand up and can make statements. What I also find is that your statement that the endorsement, as you characterize it, was withdrawn, is also not, I would say, accurate. What I find is that in April of 2008, the National Kidney Foundation issued a statement in which they said that the previous 1981 statement had been challenged by a lawyer, an individual with public health training, and an academic dentist, all who oppose fluoridation. They went through and did an analysis of what the information before them was. They found, by the way, that public water systems in the United States, serving about 1.6 million people, that's a relatively low number, have naturally occurring levels of fluoride that exceed the optimal level of fluoridation recommended by the EPA. They said there are rich dietary sources of fluoride, including teas and marine fish, and that it is not possible under current labeling standards to undertake a study to determine what is the effect of the dietary fluoride people are taking in that way, and how you would separate out any fluoride they receive from optimally fluoridated water. They came to an analysis and recommendation. They said, quote, dietary advice for patients with chronic kidney disease should primarily focus on established recommendations for sodium, potassium, calcium, phosphorus, energy calorie, protein, fat, and carbohydrate intake. Intake is a secondary concern. They went on to say specific recommendations regarding fluoride intake in chronic kidney disease patients are not possible based on available limited data. They went on to say that the National Kidney Foundation has no position on the optimal fluoridation of water, and the ultimate conclusion was that the 1981 National Kidney Foundation position paper on fluoridation is outdated. Now, I would say to you, I regard your characterization of what happened, first the statement that there had been an endorsement of fluoridation by the National Kidney Foundation, And the second, that they withdrew that endorsement as being below the level of accuracy that's going to convince me that you folks can successfully challenge the scientific consensus that I understand is out there. So for your information, when I looked into what you asked me to look into, you fell below the standard. Thank you.
And I'll be glad to forward you the link for that information. That was my statement.
Excuse me. Any further comments from council? Any further citizen comments? With no executive session scheduled this evening, we are adjourned.